All right, nice to have you back with us on this Sunday morning of Mother's Day. Bruce Jenkins, good morning. How are things at home today?
Things are well at home. Thank you.
Very good. Well, we've got baseball coming up. A lot of things going on in the world of sports. I don't know if you saw this morning, but Bob Baffert, the trainer of Medina Spirit that won the Kentucky Derby, the horse has been disqualified for failing a drug test, and the horse said he has no idea how it got in his feed.
And Baffert banned from Churchill Downs. I'm not sure for how long. I just now saw that, but that's pretty heavy stuff.
Yep, it is. And
the humans always get in the way, don't they?
Right. The horse's comment was well taken. We've heard it before.
That particular horse has always been extremely lucid.
I don't know how it happened. Hey, Johnny Cueto comes off the injured list today, Bruce. And just looking back on some of Johnny Cueto's things as a Giant. You know, he's 130-90 in his major league career, but as a Giant, he's been terrific. Just had a couple of injury plague season, but he is the ace of this staff. I still think, even with Gausman, Cueto is the guy. When you give him the ball, something good is going to happen.
Oh yeah, I always think that when I see him. I will say that if they had a one game to win, just the way things start right now, I think I'd start Gausman. I mean, the Padres have had three looks at him now, and they still can't see him after last night. But I agree. I mean, Cueto's a big-time pitcher, ton of history, and you can't go wrong there. And he really fits the mold of this delightfully surprising team with Posey and Crawford and Belt and Longoria playing not just well, playing great. And, you know, the veterans are leading the team, and it would be really nice if Cueto is back, you know, for a long spell, because he's been in and out sort of with various ailments. And, you know, with Sanchez going down, it would be nice to get him in there as a regular member of it.
Well, he's 85 games as a Giant. He's 34-20, which is almost .667. So it's, you know, pretty good numbers for Mr. Cueto in that regard. Bruce, you mentioned the way the team is playing, and Will and I and Bill talked about it. You know, you look at the veterans and Crawford and Belt and Longoria, Posey, Bruce, if these guys keep this up for another couple of months even, they're having career years at this stage of their career.
Well, I don't think Posey's going to hit .397, but he may very well hit .330, which is a hell of a thing in any era, because what he's doing is absolutely for real. The teammates are blown away, and you know, I think Slater called him a generational talent, and all the things they may have heard about him during the Giants' glory years are coming to life now in just a terrific way. You know, Belt absolutely can sustain, you know, putting a few balls in the arcade. That's what he's always done. He's not going to hit 300, but he's going to work the count to 3-2, and he's going to walk or, you know, hit one out maybe. Crawford, you know, his bat is definitely revived. I mean, I think Kapler said that this is what he's always done. You know, in truth, the last couple of years he hasn't been a really impactful hitter, but he is absolutely that now. I mean, he's just jacking balls out of the yard and looking really good at the plate. He's not getting fooled very often. Of course, his defense is unbelievable. And, you know, just from last night, I mean, Longoria at third base, man, good grief. Oh, it's so beautiful to watch. One of the most relaxed hitters I've ever seen in my life at the plate. He looks like he just woke up, but he's ready to hit. And nothing flusters him up there. And so it's amazing. I think whether they're all going to finish with career years, I think that might be a little bit much. But to sustain what they're doing, just kind of being who they are and staying healthy, I think it's quite feasible.
Yeah, not impossible to do it. And look, they've gotten past this part of the season, the toughest part of the beginning of the season, and we'll see where it goes. But it does create a little bit of a dilemma for Farhan, you know, because April and May, you see who you have. June, you kind of fine-tune. In July, are you going to make deals? Now, it's a long way off. We got about another 50 games until we get to that point of the season. Anything can happen. But, you know, frankly, I wouldn't bust the team up. I think this team, in this stage of baseball, the way the game is played today with their starting pitching and their hitting home runs and their soft contact from the starting pitchers, They're not chasing pitches. These are the winning elements. I would keep this team together because the farm system is loaded. How many more prospects do they need in the farm system? I think they have a shot to do something here.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, if it's the trading deadline time and they're still playing like this, even if they're just three or four games out, but they're within striking distance of the Dodgers and San Diego, I think it'd be ridiculous to break it up. I mean, I really don't think they would get, you know, glowing offers for any of these guys we're talking about. I mean, Posey would be untouchable. It's oddly, I think even Crawford might be untouchable right now, but for what he's going to give you the rest of the season. And you know, for Longoria and Belt, you know, tremendous players, but I don't know what they could bring you really, in terms of you wouldn't trade what they give you now, just mm-hmm. spiritually as well as on the field. And you know, like you say, the farm system is loaded. It's great that it's underway now. We're going to be seeing some streaming feeds of stuff that's going on down there. So it's just a really good time for the organization. And you know, I don't think anybody expects him to win the thing, but it's so much fun. Why mess with it?
Well, look at the Dodgers last night. They were up 13-0.
Oh, my God.
Seriously, 13-0, and I shut it off. I was watching for a while. I said, all right, 13. Dylan Bundy was awful, and I shut it off, and I went to the Atlanta game with the Phillies, mm-hmm. which turned out to be an amazing game as well. Sandoval, another ninth-inning pinch-hit home run to tie the game up. But the Dodgers end up winning 14-11. How about that?
Yeah, I had the game on tape, and, you know, I checked the internet so often I couldn't help but see what the score. I go, wow, 14-11, you know, what a slugfest. And I start watching, it's 13-0. I go, this is really going to get bad. I hope Kershaw isn't part of this, because I've got kind of a soft spot for him. He's such a great guy and a great pitcher. And sure enough, it was 13-0 when he left. And that bullpen, which is just a huge problem for them, Marty, especially the first guys who come in, just horrendous. Next thing you know, it's panic time, and a 13-run lead turns into panic. So that's funny, because it was a great game for the Dodgers, and yet it illustrated, you know, and their defense was terrible too. I mean, they've got some things they really got to work out.
Well, it's a long, long, long way to go, but the Giants are playing good baseball in the categories of baseball today, and that's my point. And the things that winning teams have to do today, they're right up there. And maybe the most important part is, you know, the defense. The defense is not being tested on shots being hit up the middle or shots into the gap. The contact is soft from the other side.
Yeah, that's so huge too, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
It's not a young team really, in essence. I mean, you don't have guys like, you know, a spectacular. Crawford is very spectacular, but it just, you know, it's a team that plays good, solid defense on routine plays, and Crawford will make the great plays. But it's just solid, and the veterans are showing the way. You know, if mm-hmm. Whatever happens at second base works out, that's an airtight infield, you know, with Posey. And like you say, without too many balls hit into the gap, whether there's a lack of speed out there, a lack of good routes, or just generally knowing the hitters, you don't pay as big of a price if the opposition isn't hurting you. You know, mm-hmm. you're up. They tend to have like a 3-1, 4-1 lead in a lot of games. They score early. They make the pitchers feel comfortable, and that's a good situation. But I don't think there's going to be some kind of defensive catastrophe, which seemed like it could happen in spring training because a lot of things were going wrong. But they really mm-hmm. figured that out, and they've got. You know, enough outfielders to cover, you know, to come in with late game stuff, maybe take Dickerson out for Slater or whatever it is, you know, bring guys, Duggar, guys who can handle it. And meanwhile, they're peppering that right field arcade now.
Aren't they? Isn't it amazing? I mean,
yeah.
Look, the guys hit it the other way and hit it out, but Crawford and Belt are zeroed in on it. How about Slater? Bruce, a couple of things about Slater. We'll talk about his mustache in a minute with Yastrzemski. But come on, he hit it like 450 yesterday to dead center field.
Yeah, well, excuse me. Going into the season, you knew that he really he looks to the opposite way. He's a dead center opposite field hitter. That's his, sort of his basic stroke, which is such a great thing to see at any time, especially in this era. with the launch angle Deadpool guys, but he's single to right. He'll still double up the alley. He'll go deep occasionally. He's just got that great off-field stroke, and it's such a great thing for the guys on the team to see. For the coaches who have drilled this in all the hitters, and a lot of these guys are going the opposite way pretty routinely. And it's just smart. It's smart ball. You don't expect the Giants to hit a lot of home runs. They are, and that can continue as far as Gabe Kapler is concerned. But to have smart hitting like that, that really sustains itself. If, you know, Slater, if he stays healthy, I just can't imagine him going into a big slump because he's just he thinks so intelligently up there.
Well, I've said it all along. I said, just leave him alone.
Yeah.
I know they want him to pull the ball, and that was a big deal in spring training. But let him hit his way. And that inside-out swing, he can hit it into the arcade, or he can hit it out 456 to center field. And I say, leave him alone. So, all right, so he's got a mustache. Yastrzemski's got a mustache. Dubon is going to put one on with mascara, apparently. It's the bonding part of baseball. If Ron Bergman was here today, he would be writing a book about the new mustache gang, like they did in the 70s with the A's.
Yeah.
But it's kind of an interesting thing to watch. Every winning team has this little thing going.
Yeah.
And maybe this is what they have going.
Yeah, definitely. It's just a lot of fun. All of a sudden, everybody's Jeff Kent out there. You know, as John Shea, everybody's in the cast of Chips. but yeah, it's. I mean, the A's are the perfect example. You know, Charlie Finley didn't like any kind of facial hair, and one time Reggie Jackson grew a mustache over the off season. And he showed up in spring training. It was this big deal. I said, "Oh my God!" You know, and Finley said, "Well, you're going to shave that off." Well, he really didn't. And next thing you know, guys are going, "Hey, well, maybe see how that looks on me." And before you know it, the whole team, basically everybody on the team, grew a mustache. They weren't all classics, but that, and it's just bonded them. I mean, they were. It was great for that team because they had a lot of disparate personalities. They feuded a lot. There were fights in the clubhouse. They always came together when it mattered. And that was just a cool thing. There was a day-by-day thing to kind of loosen up the mood. And, you know, the other teams didn't quite know what to do with it. I mean, you don't – all of a sudden, you can't do that. That's the A's thing, you know.
Well, it was Charlie Finley paid him for everyone who grew a mustache.
That's right. He wound up paying him, yeah.
I remember $250, which, whatever. It was a lot of money in those days. But
yeah.
I mentioned the name Ron Bergman. A lot of people
don't know who
that is. Bruce, tell everyone about Ron Bergman.
Oh, Bergie, he was so great. I mean, for the Oakland Tribune, curbing the A's during the glory years, he was a very, very interesting man, an extremely good writer, very literate. I always used to talk to him about music. He was extremely wise to jazz and pop music from his day. And I tell you, he worked a clubhouse like nobody else. There's a real art to that, especially a team like the A's, where who knows what's who's popping off, who's irate at you, you know. But to go around and get the quotes that you need, usually, you know, by himself, making sure that he's the only one who gets it. Really shining in the most difficult times, and of course during the glory years, and I can attest to this. I was working on the desk at the Chronicle through most of the 70s, writing headlines and editing, and taking Bob Stevens' dictation, and we weren't traveling with the A's at all. So when they're on the road and, you know, all this stuff is happening, and Ron Bergman, he'd wake up in the morning, "Ah, man, he did it again." And I'd have to write a follow-up story. You know, I'd call Charlie Finley, and he'd be half in the bag at 3 o'clock and to follow up on what just happened. Meanwhile, something new's happening right now. But we were constantly chasing Bergie's stuff because we weren't even there. But even if you were there at home games, he was still going to come up with something that was unique and always extremely readable, and just a huge loss when he passed.
Yeah, what a character. But his book, The Mustache Gang, is really one of the best books written about the A's in that era, and he wrote it. I remember one quote. Remember Irv Noren? He was the coach.
Sure, lefty hitter.
Yeah,
the coach, way
he was, yeah, he was a coach for the A's with Dick Williams, and he had a daughter. And his daughter married another writer, Jim Street. Remember Jim Street?
Sure. Yeah, we call him the QB after the Texas QB.
Yeah, and they said to Irv Noren, "Well, what do you think about your daughter marrying a writer, Jim Street?" And he looked at the questioner and he said, "Well, listen, it could have been worse. She could have married Ron Bergman."
So. By the way, for listeners, I just looked it up on Amazon. The Mustache Gang is available paperback on Amazon. Hell of a read.
Terrific. It's terrific.
Yeah.
Going back, Tony La Russa was in the news this week, Bruce, of not knowing the rule in extra innings where if a pitcher leads off, you can go to the player who preceded him in the order. And he didn't know it, and he put Liam Hendricks out there for a whole inning. He had him at third base where if there was a play at the plate, he was going to have to come crashing in. And then he went out in the next half inning and, of course, gave up the winning run. So Tony had to wear it. But, boy, that was shocking to me that he didn't know the rule.
Yeah, not a good thing. I mean, he's made a lot of moves that have come under question, leaving players in too long or an odd pinch hitting thing, and so the press has been wary of him just from the start, just because of his age and his absence from the game. I will say during Tony's prime, if you questioned him on anything in terms of a baseball, you know, deep inside baseball, he'd just crush you. He'd come back at you and make you feel small. But with this one, he goes, I screwed that up. I didn't know the rule. He's copping to his mistakes. He's talking later about how he could have done this better and that better, which he has to do now. I mean, he can't be doing these things and be, you know, just arrogant and above it all, too. So he's riding it out as best he can. I think he's got a good enough team to be a contender all year. And I kind of hope that's the case. I certainly don't want the guy to flame out and have his career end in such a negative way. I think his team's going to carry him, Marty, but he's having a rough go so far.
Yeah, this one is not a guarantee. This is trouble. He lost Jimenez. He lost Robert.
Yeah, not good at all.
No, he lost a couple. And Abreu's hitting about what we weigh. So, you know, he's the MVP, so that's not going well. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Seven-inning double.
I'm up to 270 after another night at the Little Original Joe's.
Well, that's right. That's right. You went on. How was it?
Oh, my gosh. Out in West Portal. It's this little place, but it's a fantastic takeout joint, you know, in the Joe's tradition. And they have an amazing upscale market packed into this space. So all kinds of little things you can get. But it's entirely recommendable. The West Portal is a great neighborhood in general. So, that was really nice. But I overrate, so I'm up to 270 now.
All right. Well, Abreu would take that.
From 190. I mean, no, I'm just kidding.
You know, Abreu would be 100 points over his average. So he would take it. Hey, you wrote a little bit about some of the rules this week. The seven-inning doubleheader, and I said it earlier, and I realized, you know, do we still need it? I mean, why can't we go back to a nine-inning doubleheader? Is there really a compelling reason to keep seven innings now?
Well, right now, I think, you know, because of the pandemic, you know, which is still in play, I don't think it's a bad idea. I like that they're playing them back-to-back and charging single admission, which is the way we remember it. I think it would be tough. I think they will go back to nine, but I just wonder how many of them they're actually going to be, because the players, if you're talking about a day-night doubleheader and they're both games are like 3 hours and 40 minutes, that's a pretty long day. They don't like conventional doubleheaders. The fans, if you only get to see one of the game, they're not that crazy about it. And if they're going to see both, I mean, there goes, you know, like 2 days. The executives don't like it, really. And I haven't heard many media people who like the old style, the way the game is played today. It's just too long of a day. So I think they'd probably go back to nine because that just makes sense from a traditional standpoint. But I don't see a whole lot of doubleheaders on anybody's schedule.
What about a rainout? You bring up a great point, Bruce. Yeah, a great point. But on the rainouts, you have to have a day-night doubleheader, and we have them all the time. But you're right. That is a long day at the ballpark.
And it costs you twice.
Yeah.
I mean, they might make it so well, they wouldn't because they'd lose money. But if when you pay a separate admission, then what do you do between games? You got to hang out for a while and then come back for another game that you're paying a separate admission for. That just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point. That maybe the seven-inning doubleheader is not going to go away so quickly. All right, that's a good point. Hey, history-wise, one that we should never forget, and that is this weekend, it was the weekend Orlando Cepeda got traded in 1966 from the Giants to the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Giants were in St. Louis playing the Cardinals, and Herman Franks got together with I guess it must have been Chubb Feeney in those days, and Cepeda's coming off an injury and said, well, we don't need him anymore. And they traded him to the Cardinals, and he had to just change clubhouses that day. How about that?
Yeah, that was a tough one for Orlando because he had always been a Giant. He loved San Francisco. He loved going out to the clubs. He just loved everything about it. You know, he's playing with Mays, McCovey, and Marichal, for heaven's sakes, and that was a really tough thing for him. He definitely got over it. He went to it. You know, the Giants had always been close, and they did get to the 62 series, but they could never win the thing. And he goes to St. Louis, and that just completed a lineup that was already blossoming. And I still remember it: Lou Brock, Curt Flood, Mike Shannon. What was it? Brock, Flood, Maris, Cepeda, mm-hmm. McCarver, mm-hmm. Shannon, Javier, Maxville. I mean, just a really solid lineup. I think I got that right. But you put Cepeda in there with guys like, Lou Brock, and Roger Maris was an unbelievable player in right field. Still had an awful lot going for him. And Bob Gibson on the mound. And they got to the World Series, and Cepeda was a huge, huge part of it. For the Giants, they felt that they had to do this because – between Cepeda and McCovey were both first basemen. That's just all there is to it. They weren't going to work in the field. They were tried out there. They weren't going to remind anybody of an excellent fielder. And so they made this deal. But unfortunately, the key to it all, Ray Sadecki, led the league in losses with the 68 Giants. He lost 18 games. So there you go.
12 and 18. Yeah, and Cepeda became a unanimous MVP. In 1967 for Orlando.
Yeah.
And thank goodness he's healthy and he's still with us and he's still part of the Giant family. So the Hall of Famer, Orlando Cepeda, we remember him today. Bill Lasky, let me ask you this. Trades, any trades come to mind for you that like a Cepeda trade that you went, wow, that's shocking to me?
I'd have to think about that one, Marty. There's some wild trades in July right before and after the All-Star game where you shake your heads and you give up three players for one player and the player's having a bad year. They're difficult. I mean, I'd have to really research that.
How about while you were playing, though?
When I was playing?
Yeah, like from your team. did anyone go all of a sudden from your team?
I can't think of those right now, Marty. I'd have to really think about that one. I want to ask both you guys a question about what's going on at Oracle Park. The Giants are 12-3 at home. They're 6-0 during day games. And you and Bruce were talking about that ball carrying to right field. And, when you talk about the balls carrying at Oracle, I really believe it's the knot holes that are closed that are making these balls carry more. And you see them, they're hitting more home runs. They have 46 home runs. Toronto, Atlanta have 47. Both of you have watched these games as much as I have. Do you think the ballpark is playing differently with those knot holes covered, Bruce?
Well, yeah, I definitely do. And it wouldn't have occurred to me until I heard some people talking about it. Mike Yastrzemski said, before you could feel that wind just coming right down on the back of your neck. You're out there in right field. You could feel it, the wind coming right through there. So you take that away, that's huge. I mean, Mike Kruko pointed that out right away last year. He said that you're out in the outfield, you definitely can feel that wind coming in. All of a sudden you shut that off. That's a big deal. I think that's a big part of it. It sounds crazy, right? But because the wind's coming out of the prevailing wind's coming out of the northwest, but it kind of wraps around there. And I think the effect has been pretty dramatic. And it's clear. I mean, like you say, I mean, we've seen a lot more opposite field home runs into the arcade, which I think is great, by the way. That should always be a part of the game. If you really jack one to the opposite field, it should go out wherever you are.
Boy, it's a great question. I'm going to defer to Yastrzemski.
Yeah.
If he says it's different, it's different, and there is something going on. They have shortened the drive to center field and right center, but still, to see we just haven't seen balls go out to right field the way they go out, and it's the right-handed hitters knocking them out. So, yeah, Bill, I'll go along with Yastrzemski. If he says he doesn't feel it, then I don't feel it.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's terrific. I mean, you lose the element of people looking through the, you know, through the knot holes, the so-called knot hole gang. But you know, I think they could possibly work their way around that with some kind of plexiglass deal where you block it off and they can still see through there. You know, when fans are coming back to the park in droves, you know, the Giants are going to want that option to be there to let people watch the game from there. So we'll see.
Well, don't we all remember the balls that were off the bricks earlier in the years of Oracle, where it seemed
like nothing
could get elevated and it would pepper the bricks and it would bounce into center field? We don't see that much anymore, and I'm seeing more carry. And as both of you said, the right-handers are now going to right field a little bit more, and it's great. But I just think the balls are carrying a lot more. And when you're looking at this team, 46 home runs, I mean, there's something to it, and they're playing so damn well at home.
Boy, it's amazing. Bill, I'm going to refresh your memory on this. There was a big trade August of 1985. The Giants got Dan Driesen. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Real funny, Marty. Yeah, I was in that one with Scotty Thompson. That was a good one.
Shocking deal.
Shocking.
And, the thing about it, I won four straight, and I just beat the Dodgers. And 6 in the morning, the phone's ringing, and Tom Haller. And Haller goes, "You need to come up to the presidential suite." And the first thing I'm thinking is, what the hell did I do last night? You know, maybe somebody was following me or something, you know. But when I got up there, boy, it was an eye-awakener going to Montreal. Sure enough, Scotty was the same way. Scotty Thompson was like, "Me? I'm included in this?" You know, Scotty was your pinch hitter mostly, your defensive replacement. But Dan Driesen was a damn good player with the Reds. He really played well.
Yeah, he didn't – out here, he didn't remind anybody of the Dan Driesen like in 1970 or whenever, when he was a tremendous lefty hitter with the Reds. But yeah, that's an all-time shocker, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'll never forget it, August of 1985. All right, Bruce, have a great day today. Enjoy the Mother's Day, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Marty, thanks a lot.
Take care, Marty. Take care, Bruce.
Well, that was a shocker. What about Jack Clark? Did he go after you?
Yeah, he went in the wintertime when he went to the Cardinals. Okay. Dave LaPointe was in that, and
what a trade
David
that
Green.
Was.
That was a big-time trade. Jose Uribe was in that. We had some good players, but you can't lose to Jack Clark. Jack Clark just went over to the Cardinals and really turned his career around.
Yeah, and David Green, they claimed he was 20, but he really was 28.
Oh, he had a cannon of an arm, just didn't have anything between his ears. He struggled. Okay. He really did struggle.
All right. Hey, Bill, we've got a good author coming up, David Fleitz, F-L-E-I-T-Z, and he wrote about Eddie Seacott. And Eddie Seacott was the pitcher for the Black Sox, the Chicago White Sox, that threw the World Series in 1919. He was a 29-game winner. And you don't get the series thrown without Eddie Seacott. And no one really knows anything about him. And it's going to be an interesting story that David wrote about him. So he's going to come up next. So we'll do that. We'll take a break. And then Bill and I will talk with Adam Copeland. And Kerry Crowley is going to do a special Mother's Day interview as well. So we've got more coming up right here in the Sports Leader.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.